I'm Angela Ross, and this is SoCal Voices. In a marked change from the racial reckoning that occurred in 2020, we kick off 2024 responding to a recent declaration by some that diversity, equity, and inclusion must die or is already dead. So where are we really with DEI? For answers, I reached out to Jonathan Dumas, an organizational psychologist, leadership and career coach, and host of the podcast, Highly Visible and a Little Misunderstood. Jonathan, welcome to SoCal Voices. And, you know, I have to tell you that in addition to your individual illustriousness all on your own, you have the distinction of being the guest on the 100th episode of SoCal Voices. So thank you for joining me in this wonderful place.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to Angela. That's huge. A lot of people don't make it past 10. So you making it to 100, it's a big deal.
It is indeed. That is a big deal. And I thank you. I appreciate that. I love doing this and I hope there'll be hundreds more. So, you know, I want to get to this, diversity, equity, and inclusion discussion with you because there has been so much disinformation and misinformation about DEI. And it seems to get a lot of folks riled up.
Yes,
so I want to start from the fundamentals. Let's start with what is DEI? What is it and what is it not?
Yeah. So I'll just talk about it in a way that folks don't get lost in the alphabet soup, because I think that there is, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice, diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, belonging and equity. There's so many different things we really think about. And there are plenty of people that have been doing this work before there were all of these fancy terms, right? Years and years and years ago. There's plenty of studies, right? But I would say that at the very like baseline, foundational, it is about human and human connection and also folks being able to show up authentically as they are, who they are, as safely as possible, right? And it goes beyond just tolerance. It's about understanding somebody else and taking somebody else's perspective. It really is about treating people with dignity and humanity. And so I would say that is baseline, right? But to get at what you're saying is that what DEI is not, it's not just a checkmark initiative at work or reading books or saying the right things or using the right language. I know plenty of people that use good language but do incredible amounts of harm to the individuals around them, both directly and indirectly, right? And I think that it has to do with their lack of seeing the humanity of folks, where they get so caught up in theory that they forget that there's another person on the other side of their words, of their presence. So that's what I would say as like baseline, without getting too caught up in theory. That's what I would say it is and isn't.
Talk about why DEI seems to make some folks so upset, because when you realize the foundational, the fundamental definition of connecting people, all the things you just said about realizing people for who they are, the authenticity, the humanness of the other person, why is it so upsetting to some people to have to even deal or think about what to do in the DEI space?
I think it has to do because it's so personal, right? When we talk about things that impact us, our personhood, our thoughts, our beliefs, we dig in, right? Even myself. And I constantly have to remind myself that like, I am not perfect, even though I've been doing this work, 10 years or something like that. There's other people that have been doing it 20, 30 years. And I constantly make mistakes and errors and I get defensive. And so just speaking personally, and I think as I've shared this, folks resonate with this, is that it is so personal. When we talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, we talk about our experiences and we bring race and we can't forget the historical and social context here in the US of what that means. Folks have never been taught how to like have conversations like this. And now that there's so much access, people do it. It's happening in a very messy way. It's happening in a way that like very microwave social media context where folks are really apt to go into their corners to defend, even though they know they're wrong. I've had conversations with folks of like, they will agree on every single point, but as soon as I label it something in particular, they're all of a sudden against it. Right. And so it really is. It's all of those things. And I think that there also is, I'm experiencing a generational divide too, where I just had a conversation with somebody who said, you know, it wasn't a big deal. I grew up with Black and Brown and Latino folks and all that other stuff. And this is a person that is a Latina woman. And I'm like, I went away from that conversation. I was like, it wasn't a big deal, or y'all didn't, or y'all like so naturally talked about it, right? I think for me as a millennial, I was told that like we grew up in this melting pot, that everybody's treated the same, that all these different things. I get to college, I leave college, and realizing that folks had a significantly easier time. Folks weren't treated the same way in school. I got reprimanded. I was treated all these different things, but I was told growing up, it doesn't matter. Just try your hardest, work hard. Everything's going to work out. It doesn't happen that way. It has never happened that way. And so I think we will constantly pay for what we don't deal with, here in the US when it comes to race, when it comes to misogyny, sexism, transphobia, so on and so forth. If we don't like deal with and have the conversations we need to have and also do the work we need to do. But I was about to get on my soapbox, but I'll stop there. But that's what I would say. There's a lot of different things in there. But that's, without getting too lost in the sauce, like that's what I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what you say is the sauce is the thing though. I mean, that's really what's happening. We are in an environment right now where we have a lot of folks trying to erase what happened, in the past. They are trying to say that, well, it didn't happen, or if it happened, it was actually a good thing, or I'm not responsible. So therefore we don't have to deal. Why are we even talking about this? Because they are not necessarily living the ramifications of it in the same way that those of us who have come up through this and had to, where the stuff was put upon our ancestors and our people. We are still seeing some of the negative effects of that, and the work that has to be done to try to get past that just really makes a lot of folks uncomfortable. But you are correct in that if we do not deal, and we are not dealing well as a nation, we see that every day, we are not going to get where we need to be. So in the effort to help us get where we need to be, I want you to talk about the work that you do with businesses and with individuals, in your coaching with executives and others, to help us move to a place where there is a sense of balance and humanity and equity and opportunity without all of the other stuff that just seems to get in the way. How do you do what you do to make diversity, equity, and inclusion, and whatever else you want to add on to that, a real living thing?
Well, it's a lot of hard work, Angela, both internally and with the people that I support and the organizations that I go into. But I love to talk about the work that I do in lanes of passions, because I think when I think about it that way, like it's energizing to me, and folks like understand that this is not just work. This is not just a 9-to-5, even though it is that it really is something that I live and do and believe in. And try to embody. And so the first one is I'm a podcast host. So I host a show called Highly Visible and A Little Misunderstood, where I have conversations with subject matter experts, friends, people that I meet all over the place, to talk about big, complex things in nuanced ways, right? And so in that way, modeling how to have conversations and being able to live in the gray. Because oftentimes when we think about diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, justice, all this stuff, folks will claim the answer, but in reality, we don't know. We really don't know. And I think that to live in the gray, to live in the I don't know and accept the I don't know, is really uncomfortable. So I try to hopefully, support listeners and folks on having those conversations, tuning in, laughing, crying, being all the things, in those conversations. And that's something I really love to do. The second piece is my coaching practice. So I am a career transition coach, particularly for Black millennials who want to experience career joy. And what that was really birthed out of my own work experience, right? Of trying to been told again as a millennial that you work hard, you do all these things and you will get to where you're supposed to go, right? And for some folks that works out. And I was one of those people that like, I was on that trajectory, but I was finding myself unhappy. Like I was kept finding myself like, why does this feel off? And oftentimes it was like, because like this is actually out of alignment with myself. And I was doing a lot of things because I told this was the right thing to do. So in my coaching practice and helping people transition into career joy, really giving them the space and allowing them to ask the questions, what do I want? What do I need? What are my values? Where do I want to go in my career? am I living in alignment with my career and what I'm doing and producing? What does success look like for me now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I love that work in particular because like I get to do it with Black folks. And it is like, for me, I've seen the healing like effects and like space where folks have created that for me. And it's just like beautiful to see folks just take the shield down, take the mask off and be themselves. And that's the kind of space I like to create. And then finally, an organizational psychologist. Like I say this as an organizational psychologist, I do organizational development work and leadership development work with an equity lens. And so I enter into that space saying, hey, let's talk about why your employees don't feel psychologically safe with your managers. And let's break that down. Let's develop training. Mm-hmm. Let's look at curriculum, how we can help support that. And I just remind them of the humanity that exists with themselves and with the people that they're leading, and how to do work, that everybody can thrive and can show up authentically, and so on. Yeah. So those are all the passions and the breakdowns of those, as simple as I can make it.
Yeah. That's a lot, and it's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kudos to you for finding your path for you that really spoke to your authentic self rather than just doing, mm-hmm. checking the boxes and doing the things that you thought you were supposed to do because somebody said you're supposed to do these things. The emotion and the feeling that comes along with the work you do is real. All those things are mm-hmm. real, and you have to face them, and kudos to you for dealing with them. I wonder if you can take a moment to think about maybe a client that you had, personal or business, that was in a place and you entered and did the stuff that you do, and they came out on the other side with a refreshing feeling of realization and that transformation. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I have one particular client. Obviously not going to give any info, but I remember the very first like vibe check call. I do that free vibe check call because I want to make sure that we make sense, right? In a coaching capacity. And I just remember that call. And she said in that call, I'm unhirable. And just like within 5 minutes of us talking, was just in tears and just like sobbing with me. It's like, I'm unhirable. Like who would take a chance on me? Who would do this? Right. And I think again, there's so many dynamics, for this particular person. Like being a woman, a plethora of things. And so I remember like just taking the first 3 to 4 sessions and like talking about that thing, that statement, I am unhirable, because I know this person. And I looked at the resume, all these different things, and looked at your LinkedIn. And I'm like, no, that's not true. So where does that come from? And it was this instilled mental barrier that she had taken on based off of experiences that she's had with her manager, that they had to have all the answers, that they had to be perfect, that every checkbox on that job description she had to fit. And if she didn't, just why would I apply for that? Why? And I am so happy to say that as of today, you know, she's gotten hired at multiple places. And like, I remember her emailing me one time and she said, you know what? I had a conversation with my manager today. She was very disrespectful to me. And I stopped her and said, you do not talk to me that way. She said that she was running an entire department from scratch, like create an entire department. And she said 3 months ago, I could not do that. I could not have imagined myself being able to do that. And in fact, she actually ended up leaving that job because that manager kept disrespecting her. And that's even a big deal because she said, I have stayed in positions for years because I didn't think I was hireable and able to move on. And now she's in a position and she absolutely loves it. It was just like wonderful to see that turnaround. And it just like, I get so happy when I get messages and emails like that, of just like doing that work, the hard work of like uncovering what that means. I'm unhirable. I'm unhappy. I feel stagnant. I feel levels of career despair. Let's talk about that. Let's sit there and like examine that, and see where that comes from. And then we'll be able to move on. I don't just try and skip over that stuff. I try and sit in that with clients and ask questions to really uncover what's there. And it's really beautiful to see what happens on the other side of that.
Yeah. You know, we internalize so much of the negative and it becomes our story. And sometimes it takes someone like you to kind of help shake that stuff loose. And then you become unstoppable because you've lifted the burden off yourself, right? And living true to yourself. And so that it's wonderful that you are out there, doing this kind of work. Jonathan, When you think about DEI efforts, when you think about the work that you do and companies and individuals you've worked with, what is the biggest misunderstanding people have about DEI? And the other part of the question is, what is the best thing about DEI?
Okay, so I have two things on this because I've gotten to the point where it very seems very pessimistic and nihilistic. So I'll save that for the second piece.
Okay.
Or maybe I'll start. Let me start with that one.
Oh, okay.
I think where we're at with DEI, DEI is not dead because that's a common refrain that's being talked about now. I think what is happening is that companies, organizations, teams, leaders thought that like if we do a training, if we contribute money, that like we were going to solve the issues, right? We had 2020, everybody's eyes were all of a sudden opened up. Everybody got language and then things were going to happen because, you know, we had this emotional high, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we know and what our elders tell us, who have been doing this work well before us, John Lewis, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, all those folks, is that it is a long, grueling, and arduous road. And so I think when they thought we were going to fix it with the way that we do in US, like with capitalism, and we just like throw money at it, it'll fix it. And a lot of these companies took back their promise, right? They didn't even give the money or contribute the money that they, like they said. But, but I think that's the biggest issue. And so I have gotten to a point for me when I do work with organizations, I have a litmus test. Is the CEO or leader, the decision makers truly on board with this? And this is what I mean by on board. Are you willing to take accountability for your shortcomings, for the shortcomings of the company? Are you willing to, even when you're taking a bottom line hit, willing to continue moving forward for the sake of your employees, for the sake of doing what's right? And oftentimes, like, I get radio silence after that. But there are people that I've worked with, organizations that I work with, that do put their money where their mouth is. And they're saying, yes, we're going to do this. And I think that that's the part that's amazing, that they accept that it is not something that you could throw money at, that one training is not going to fix, that it is internalized work, an individual work as like self, and then also a community effort, right? Where, what are you doing outside of these trainings? What are you doing in your reflection time, pondering time? When you say something, a microaggression, when you witness a microaggression, what are you doing? And then also as a community, how are you bringing people into that instead of like, I hate the word cancel culture because really nobody gets canceled. It's just they go away and they come back later. Mm-hmm. But it's like, how are you leaning into the discomfort as a community? Because that is what it is. That's the beautiful part about true belonging, justice work. It is not individualistic. It is not like driven by capitalism and bottom dollar or bottom line like costs and all these different things. It is driven by humanity and how we are going to do this thing together. And like when I've seen it done right, it's beautiful. Like I think back to a facilitation I did earlier this year. And it literally was all like, it was open call and it was all white women that came to it. And I just remember talking about like microaggressions and privilege. And there was one person in particular that was a queer white woman, and they actually shared that, "This is the first time I'm realizing that I have been trying to hide behind my queerness as like my marginalized identity and therefore separating myself from the other white people that are doing wrong, that are doing, you know, that are racist or whatever," right?
Mm-hmm.
And saying,
mm-hmm.
"I am not like them. I am different," and hiding behind their marginalized identity. And this was the first time they said they actually leaned into the discomfort and recognized the amounts of privilege they had all throughout their life. Middle to upper middle class, private school, don't have student loans, bought a house, all these different things, has a great job, all of these things, right?
Mm-hmm,
and they didn't shy away from the fact that like, yes, I worked, I did that, but I also recognized I had a significantly easier time than my counterparts, than black folks and brown folks or whatever, right? And I think that those moments, those are the things that energize me. I love those. Not just with white people, because I'd be having some interesting conversation with black folks.
I'm sure.
But those are like those moments right there. I'm like, we're doing it. Mm-hmm. You are getting it. You're making that connection. And I think that those are the life changing, impactful, things and movements that, you know, there are ripple effects. Those are the ripple effects. So yeah, I'll stop. I'll stop there.
Well, when you get hired, when you get brought into these organizations, are they finding you? Do you have a real strong marketing push that you do? How do these companies come to say, you know what, we want to have this training, you know, they have the training hat, but then they realize, oh no, we really need to do some meaningful work here. How are folks finding you?
Yeah, well, I'm most active on LinkedIn, so it's really like folks engaging with me on LinkedIn. I'm engaging with some posts and stuff like that. Referrals, like people, you know, hey, I did some work with Jonathan, or I know this, he's done this, and so it's like things like that, where they're like, you know what, this is what we need, and kind of word of mouth. It is, I think that, and I had a conversation with a friend of mine that DEI space. I think a lot of DEI practitioners are like putting up a front as to like this amazing success that they're having. Because this particular person I'm talking with has a very pretty decent following, but they were pretty transparent about like their revenue costs and like how many people are coming to them, right? And how many people that they can actually take, because there's actually not alignment with the work that they actually do. And so I think, even to be quite frank, it is a lot of work to market and have these conversations. And some conversations go on for so long, and it's a lot. And so I think that there has been a not as much investment in DEI as there was a couple years ago. So we're looking at a shift. And so my big push now, and what I'm talking to folks about now, is like DEI practitioners, there's a need to be flexible in the work that you do. And that's why I always let people know I'm an organizational psychologist. Like the work that I do with an equity lens. I can help you with your organizational development. I can help you with your leadership development. Like those are literally my specialties. Leadership development in particular. And so, and the fact that I do it with an equity lens, where I'm looking at who's included, belonging, justice oriented, a trauma-informed lens, actually elevates that work and makes it more impactful. Because in reality, that's what DEI is, right? It's not just a department. It is interwoven in every facet of the business. And as an aside, I would say that is the misconception about DEI as well, is that like, oh, it's just a department. Like that's what they do. No, you in the accounting department, you in like a product services, UX design, UI, all that stuff. Like it involves HR, all of y'all, it involves all of y'all. So I would say that. So that's how they're like finding me, but it's been an interesting road, but having conversations like this helps as well. And get people to find your boy.
Mm-hmm. To have awareness and to get your name out there and more. And the good work that you're doing, Jonathan. On a more personal note, I want to ask you about your own influences and that core experience, or that individual who really steered you or helped you recognize, make that light bulb go off over your head and go, yeah, this is the space I really need to be in. Who or what was that, and what was it like?
I this may sound cliche, but I don't care. I love the woman. I would say my wife, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a very self-assured person, and I would spend years and years and years like believing that my fulfillment, that my worth, that my productivity, time, all that stuff was owned by organizations or owned by other people. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until 2021 where I've been going back and forth about, like, you know, work was very hard. I was commuting like an hour and a half, 2 hours each way. Just being mistreated by clients. and I'm trying to care for my team. Well, mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that job, but it was her that told me, just quit and do it, because I believe in mm-hmm. you. Like the things you talk mm-hmm. about, the things you're doing, I believe in you, and we will make it work. And every single time that I wanted to quit, every single time that I doubted myself, every single time that I don't know, didn't realize like how persevering and dynamic and charismatic and innovative and creative and all those different things that I was, like she reminded me of that she like let me know. Right. And those moments where my, I try as much as I hard to show up without an armor, to spaces, but she's the one where I could just take it all off and be myself with. And it's just, it's incredible to have a partner that does that for me. And I think we've gone through a lot in our relationship, especially her being blonde haired, blue eyed white woman, from mm-hmm. Minneapolis, just outside of Minneapolis. And, I think we've had to explore not just the racial aspects, not just the socioeconomic aspects, because she grew mm-hmm. up upper middle. I grew up working class, paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. But like, what does it truly mean, for her to be an ally, for her to not just fight for the, equality, equity, and justice for like the students and school faculty, all that stuff that she's fighting for, but mm-hmm. also like me as her partner, right? And it's not just a given thing. And I think some folks that are in interracial marriages, or relationships forget that piece. We're like, oh, I'm married to so-and-so, so I'm good. Nope.
I'm good. Nope, yeah. Nope, box
no,
check.
No,
right?
No. And yeah, we've had very challenging conversations around mm-hmm. what that looks like, what not just allyship looks like, but accompliship. Like,
yes.
I've seen this woman literally when we went protest in 2020, put her life on. And I'm 6'3", mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. you know, 175, 180. I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But this woman, like literally, buck 15, five, six or whatever, like mm-hmm. putting her body in between myself and the police. Like, mm-hmm. And I think that that's just an incredible sight to see. So I would say my partner, for sure has been that person for me.
I appreciate you sharing that. And that is some powerful stuff when you've got someone in your life like that. Everybody needs someone like that. And, you know, that's the goal, right? That we're all about this work is for people to appreciate who they are, regardless of some of the superficial stuff, some of the labels that we create, the cultural experiences that we have, to be able to come together with a person and just meet them where they are. And for that to be fruitful and beautiful, that's a powerful thing, no matter what the package looks like, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's where we're trying to get. Well, Jonathan, I really appreciate, your insight, your expertise. Truly a delight to chat with you. I know you're not feeling 100% today, so extra appreciation for you, toughing it out, with me. And, again, joining me on, episode 100. This is really meaningful to me. And I've enjoyed the time with you. So thank you so much. And hopefully, some folks will hear this discussion and, peel away their DEI, over defensiveness and just let the insight in and let's all be better with each other going forward.
Yes. Lean into the discomfort. I appreciate you having me, Angela. This was wonderful. Definitely worth pushing through. Congratulations on episode 100. It's truly incredible.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Jonathan. You take care.
Absolutely.
Hi, Angela Ross here. If this episode would be of value to someone you know, please share it with them. Your share helps someone you care about, and SoCal Voices reaches more people. Win-win. Thanks.